So welcome, everyone. I was just struck by, in John's reciting of that opening gatha, that poem, I think he said, let the Sangha generate peace as one body. That's an interesting phrase. And generate peace can almost sound like something we need to do. Like generating peace, we could think, well, I'll just say peace, right? It's kind of like a generating thing. I'll just say peace over and over again. And that way we'll have peace in the world. Prayers for peace, words of peace. But I don't know if that's how you generate peace. Because those are just words. And we know it is through the actions of human beings that war, violence, conflict is in the world and in relationships. So to generate peace means we need to become peaceful people. Peaceful people create a peaceful world. Violent people create a violent world. Hateful people create a hateful world. Ignorant people create an ignorant world, right? I mean, there's a relationship between the actions of beings and their minds. So if, let's say we're a group of people who would like to see a peaceful world, right? Would like people to act kindly to one another, then the first step we need to do is make sure that we have become that. And so to generate peace means that I have the capacity within myself to be free of conflict, to be free of struggle, to be free of all the kinds of divisive mind states that create a disharmony, ill-being, suffering in my mind, right? Now, that's not that hard. But it certainly points us in the right direction if we want a peaceful world. Because it's often struck me as somewhat interesting that many people who want a peaceful world yet don't seem to have the capacity of being peaceful with themselves or peaceful with their loved ones or neighbors or friends. Or I mean, how can we? It's like we want to leap over. We want to leap over all that and just get right into the peaceful world. Unfortunately, it doesn't work that way, does it? You know, we look at our world, we look at our history, the world's history, and we know always, especially in terms of religious founders, whatever, there's been a lot of social movements, etc. There's been a lot of work. A lot of talk about peace. And yet we still have an incredibly violent world. We have a very violent country, right? Why is that? It's because of the minds of people. If the minds of people are not at peace, if the minds of people are not filled with love and understanding, or filled may be a little dramatic, at least, you know, some, enough understanding and love that their most negative impulses are tempered, remediated, calmed. How can we expect a peaceful world? The peaceful world doesn't just appear out of the ether. the peaceful world only appears from the actions of human beings, right? And so, you know, this comes back to very importantly the social implications of meditation. Because some people think that you create a peaceful world through a political struggle, right? How can that happen? Right? Because you're always imposing the solution from the outside, when the solution has to come from the inside, right? So in that sense, meditation, all types of meditative endeavors that calm, that clear the mind, all types of meditative practices that open the heart, so that one truly has the capacity to love. Certainly all types of meditative practices that dissolve the selfish, self-interest, narcissistic mind states that so many people are involved in, right? So all those types of things, and also those things, obviously, patience and understanding, so all those qualities contribute to the development of truly peaceful people, right? And truly peaceful people only want to create a peaceful world. They don't even have to do it, right? It will happen, right? Because when enough people are at peace with themselves, and at peace with their community, with their loved ones, with the earth, you know, the world will change. Right? But if that doesn't happen, and the solution to these very human problems are always political, right? We see what happens. It's an endless struggle, of which power over and retribution and antagonism and conflict seems to be the you know, the dominating force. So you know, if anybody wonders what a one way to respond to the hatred and the violence that is in the world, in our society, in our community, in our cities, in our towns. The first thing we could do, not the only thing, but certainly an extremely important thing, is make the commitment to truly become a peaceful person, a person who lives in relationship to themselves, to their body, and to others from the basis of nonviolence, ahimsa, nonviolence, with the first of the Buddha's teachings on right conduct. Do not harm. Do not harm. Do no harm to yourself, your body. Do no harm to other human beings. Do no harm to the earth. Do no harm to animals, right? Do no harm. I mean, that, you know, that simple one. It's very powerful. You know, you don't need too much more, do you? Do no harm. Again, this does not means you know, that political movements, social movements, political social movements, economic movements to benefit people, you know, may or may not be beneficial. They may or may not. But the personal transformation that is always available to each of us right now, right, that choice to truly be a peaceful person, to be at peace with oneself and one's life and one's situation and one's community and the world, to come from a place of love rather than hate, from a place of acceptance rather than judgment, criticism, right? To do one's best to understand. You know, that choice is always available to us right now. We don't have to wait to the political, social group that we may adhere to or want to see succeed. You know, we don't have to wait till that happens, do we? Early on, Thich Nhat Hanh, I know many of you know Thich Nhat Hanh, familiar with his, you know, he wrote a wonderful paper around the time of the Vietnam War where he called Buddhist social action, he called it love in action. Beautiful term, love in action. Love in action doesn't mean it's a word. Again, words are easy. Right? Love in action means that your action is the mind state of that, of your action is coming from love. That's the mind state. And that should be our mind state in everything we do. Right? Throughout our day and all the relationships of people, you know, that we're supposed to be in loving relations with, but, you know, people we work with and people we meet on the street and friends and, you know, the world and people we read about. You know, can we generate love, loving kindness, caring, hope for their well-being, hope that they're free of suffering? Right? Do our best to understand them, especially when they act in ways that cause suffering to other people. To stop and go, why would somebody do that? Right? Right? Most of us would go, I would never do that. Right? Hopefully many of us would say that. But to say that doesn't mean that we don't take that step of saying, why would somebody do that? Right? It must be somebody who suffers greatly. Somebody in great pain, somebody very alone, somebody very disturbed because they're disturbed. So let us generate peace. So when we hear those words, we go inside ourselves and we make sure that our minds are at peace. Our hearts are at peace. We have no enmity toward anyone. If you go inside and you find out you're angry at somebody or you hate somebody, you're pissed off at somebody, you know, practice loving kindness toward them. Generate loving kindness. If you're angry, you're hateful, step into their shoes. You know, Shantideva, the great Indian exponent of the Bodhisattva way, he said the antidote to anger, the antidote to violence and anger is understanding. Interesting. He said, you know, when you go inside the other person and understand the causes and conditions that have caused them to act in the way they have, you can no longer hate them. You can no longer be angry at them because you can understand clearly that they couldn't help do what they did. Now, we don't like that, do we? We'd much rather stay pissed. Or get even. Or at least be superior to. Right? So it's hard for us to let go. And to really, you know, look at the people in the world and look at the people in our life who seem to be causing suffering to others, and to try to understand them. But at the same time, as I said before, to make sure that we're not hypocrites, right? That we're really free of that. Because, you know, many of the people who do the vilest things in the world are kind of like us. They're just, you know, a little more intense. They push it a little further. But it doesn't mean the seeds of that kind of action, that kind of behavior, is not in us. We all have seeds. We all have seeds of wonderful things, and we all have things of terrible things. For some, those negative seeds might be just little blips, little thoughts, little impulses that just pass through that we don't give into. But the seed is there, isn't it? And it could very well be that if that seed had been watered a lot in our life, it might be much stronger in us than it is. Perhaps we've been lucky, right? That we have a life where our better seeds were watered. We've been able to water other people's watered us, a life watered. And that those negative ones, the ones that have the capacity to do harm, have not been so watered. But again, a lot of that is just our good fortune. I mean, it's hard to say when you look at somebody, even somebody who does something quite terrible, if you step into their life and really go, well, what if it was me born into this family? What if it was me that had a father like this, a mother like this? What if it was me who had, you know, who went through all those, right? Could you really say, I wouldn't have done that? Or I wouldn't have been there? It's hard, once you step into that, to go, yeah, that could have been me. A few of us have that initial burst from infancy or birth of utter exemplary purity that we find ourselves destined for immaculate Buddhahood in one lifetime, no matter what the situation. Many of us have been helped along the way. And to acknowledge that is humbling, right? Because we don't think, oh, it's just me. That's why I'm so good. No, we've had people and situations and teachers who have helped us along the way, supported us, nurtured us, modeled behavior for us. So we need to generate peace. And then again, when we generate peace as one body, when we flow like a sangha, a community, when, it becomes more powerful, doesn't it? It's the power of community. When people come together and generate these qualities, it has a greater intensity, and it has the power of, the idea behind a river is the flow of the river takes everything along, right? When you put your boat in the river, the current of the river makes it much easier, right, to go along, to move fast. As opposed to, if I was rowing my boat in some little tiny creek, it could be hard. All by myself, right? There's no current to support me. There's no depth of water, right, to free me. So it's hard work paddling my own little boat in a tiny little stream. Right? But when I can get out into the river, the beautiful wide river with a beautiful current, right, that takes me along. I don't have to work so hard. There's something supporting me, right? And that's part of what community is about. Spiritual communities, all types of communities, right? We support each other, and in that support of each other, we become more than the individual, right? And we all of a sudden realize, because of the support and because of the stimulation and because of the inspiration, etc., we are able to move along more quickly than we would have by ourselves. because there's an energy. The river of community, especially when it's a community that is moving in the same direction, that has a power to help us as individuals. We don't have to struggle as hard. You know, in the Buddhist tradition, there are various levels of practice, but when one gets to the four levels of what the Buddha called enlightened practice, the Arya Sangha. In Buddhism, you know, there's a Sangha, you know, the Sangha, the Buddhist community, and traditionally the regular Sangha is called the Fourfold Sangha. And in that Sangha, you have, you know, people like us. We laymen and laywomen who have taken the five mindfulness trainings or precepts and the three refuges. And then you have monks and nuns, the bhikkhus and bhikshus, who've taken, 285 and 300 and something. They have a lot of. But anyhow, laymen and laywomen, monks and nuns, they're considered the fourfold Sangha, based on their ordination, based on their precepts they've taken. But then we could say after that is the Arya Sangha, the higher Sangha. And this is a Sangha that is based on realization. It doesn't matter whether you're a laywoman, or a monk or a nun. It really matters what your level of understanding is. And we won't go into it, but the first level is called the Satipanna, the stream enterer. I think that's a wonderful phrase. That's what the Buddha called. So people who've had initial insights, some insights into the nature of reality, the nature of self, nature into impermanence, things like that. That's not just intellectual, but that's a direct, more direct intuitive understanding of these things. It's called a stream enterer because just it's the kinds of things I was talking about, because no longer are you on your own struggling against the forces of your own ignorance, you know, and conditioning and reactivity and neuroses, you know what I mean? It's always, but all of a sudden, oh, I get it. You know, it's like maybe somebody tonight got it. Oh, yeah. Do no harm. How simple, right? Wow, that's all. And all of a sudden, all kinds of things you've been struggling with, should I be like this, or holding on to this, or acting like this, or all becomes clear, right? Oh, do no harm. Yeah. And every time you find yourself doing harm to yourself or anyone else, you just stop, and you just enter that river of harmlessness. So it's like that. When we have a breakthrough, when we really understand something deeply, no longer is it a struggle, because we get it, right? You know, it's like the addict, right, who finally gets it. You know, like maybe my addiction is the major cause of why my life is always in the pits, right? Maybe I just gotta, you know, stop. Oh, and all of a sudden what? Things change. And you enter a new stream. Something carries you along. It's called recovery or sobriety, whatever that is. But it's the same way. The river of community, the river of deep understanding, the river of love, you know. Most people, they're always kind of trying to figure it out. Every situation, trying to think their way through it. What would I do here? How do I respond there? You know what I'm saying? A lot of people like that. They're always up in their heads and always analyzing and figuring and trying to understand, you know. But what I'm talking about is much easier than that, right? You know, when you feel these rivers, these undercurrents, right, of goodness, of altruism, of understanding, right, that are running through us, part of our human experience, right? And all of a sudden, when you're willing to step into them, and let them take you along for the flow. You know, sometimes Well, again, you know, when you go to get into the river, you do lose a certain level of freedom, don't you? The river is a river, and it's going somewhere, right? And if you're going to get in the river, you're going to have to want to go where the river's going. Or you're not going to be happy. It's not going to be a good ride, and you may struggle. But if you know that the river is something that you want to get into, and that the path of the river, the flow of the river, is what you want to be part of. See, then it's kind of easy, isn't it? Right? I just got to what? I just got to stay in the river. Right? I don't need to be bushwhacking every step of the way. I don't need to be constantly finding my way and macheting my way through, and you know what I mean? Right, and going false starts and up this one and down this one and getting lost. And no, I just got to stay in the river. Right? That's all. I want to stay in the middle of the river. right in the center of it. Just go right along with it. That spiritual community, that spiritual path, that's a way of living. And again, once you find your river, and everybody hopefully will find their river. I mean, Buddhism is just one river. I'm not saying Buddhism is the only river, many wonderful rivers. We're very fortunate. You know, even though human beings for thousands of years have great capacity to create great misery for each other, there's also human beings of the great capacity to develop great wisdom, great goodness. And so there are many paths of altruism. Many, many rivers. Some are very wide rivers, some are smaller rivers, but lots of rivers. And hopefully everyone here will find a river for themselves. That they can enjoy. That will take them where they want to go. That's what a path is. It takes you where you want to go. Right? A path goes somewhere. So once you know where you want to go in this life, you know, you find a path that you know will take you there, and then it's simple. You just flow along. Stay in the river. Does anybody have any questions about what I just have been talking about, or comments, or criticisms, or challenges? Or please don't feel shy. Or if you think it's just kind of spiritual babble and has nothing to do with your daily life and the reality of your life, but please say that if that's what you really think. Or also, if you think it does merit something, are you clear in your life how you're going to do it? If not, please don't hesitate to ask a question. We're all in this together.
Well, earlier I was thinking about, and now I'm thinking about, not just the ease of joining, but what's the role of right energy, strong energy, diligence, when you're kind of stuck or not facing habits or not opening those kinds of situations, is it, and I mean, I know it's about, it must be about the heart, it must be about mindfulness and merging, but it's, you know, what role is, you know, kind of open but strong energy, how does that work?
Yeah, that's a good question. Thank you, John. So that's, yeah, okay. So we can continue with our river analogy, or we can go to our path analogy, but, you know, do you just float? Right? Some rivers have enough little current, you can just kind of get on them and just float. Kind of slow. It's easy. Right?
Well, I'm from the west where you have big rocks in the river.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, that's
four
very,
five,
yeah, see, that's very, right, so that's very good, John, because that's part two. Yeah, so part one is, yeah, so let's say there's a river, and it's moving at a slow current, let's say. Now, you know that if you just get your boat in there, and you just kind of keep your paddle there, and you don't paddle too much, you know, it'll take you to the sea. At the rate the current's moving, it may take about 10 years, but you're not in a hurry, right? And you don't feel like working too hard, and right? It's kind of pleasant, just floating, you lay back. I used to go in the Peace River a lot when the kids were younger, and canoe in the Peace River, and you can kind of just lay back there, you know, and be floating around, and right? So that's okay. But, you know, so part of it is, I mean, part of my energy is, you know, do I want to get there? And do I want to get there? And when I want to get there, there's like a coefficient of what? Of kind of. Kind of not wanting to be where I am, combined with my desire to be where I want to be. So that kind of reflection self-reflection self-contemplation is important, right? What am I talking about? I'm saying, you know, where am I in my life? And if I say, I really want, let's say what we're talking about now, I want to be a peaceful person. I really want to be a peaceful person inside me. And I want to be free of anger and jealousy and fear and unhappiness. And I want to be, I want to be less egocentric and less narcissistic and less always focused on myself. You know what I mean? Let's just, for starters. You know, you look at your life and you go, yeah, I mean, it's not as if I'm the most horrible person in the world, but I know that I'm really, I know in my heart that I'm capable of much more, but yet I continue to live, from this narrow place of selfhood and et cetera, right? So that's important. That kind of self-reflection and or else looking around and looking at the, you know, what's going on in society and the world, you know, and going, yeah, I want to do it differently, you know? And so that reflection is very, you know, in Buddhism, reflections on impermanence, reflection on the suffering of human life, reflections on birth and death, you know, all this kinds of stuff are part of the path, because it means that we're reflecting on life, and that energizes us. But again, it doesn't have to be an intellectual kind of conceptual thing. It can be very, very personal. You know, one looks at one's own life and how one's living one's life and real and the true state of one's mind, you know, the mind that we hide from everybody else, but we really know what's going on there. You know, I mean, is that the way I want to continue to live and relate and come from in my life? So that energizes us, right? That's kind of like, you know, the carrot and the stick kind of thing. That's a little bit like the stick. It kind of pushes us along from behind. But the carrot is something that that is not that that for many of us, especially in the early stages of practice, is something we have a sense of, but not something that we have realized. And that traditionally is the role of masters, of Buddhas, of teachers. You know, it's sort of like, you know, we're stuck in the mud, right? And somebody comes along, you know, comes along and says, "I know a way out." You know, you don't have to stay stuck in the mud, right? And that message, especially if we have gotten very used to where we live, and we think it's just normal, right? That having somebody comes along, and this is the role of a teacher or a master, whatever, comes along and says, "No, you know, right? I know you've grown up, you know, in the flatlands, right? I know you've grown up in Florida, right? And there's nothing wrong with that. But if you like views, you know, if you like, you know, wondrous views, you know, why don't you, you know, and I know you took a trip to North Carolina once, and you, but, you know, there are these Rockies, you know, they're like 10,000 feet. You know what I mean? And the views are incredible, and the air is incredible, and the night skies are incredible, right? Now, if I've always lived in Florida, I don't know anything about that, do I? But when somebody comes along and says, there is something else, and you know, all you could do is go there. You know, it's not an elite club. You know, it's not restricted space. Anybody can go there. So that's the role of teachers, masters, Buddhas, Christ, you know. They come into this world and they show us another way. You know, we may have a sense that the way we're living, the way we're relating, the way we feel inside ourselves, there's something missing or there's something more. But because, you know, everybody else is kind of in the same boat, we really don't, you know, have a real sense of really something, living a life radically different. Right? So when we encounter the path, when we encounter the teachers, when we encounter the teachings, when we encounter living representatives that inspire us, that also energizes us. Right? It's not just something I read, or it's not just, you know, spiritual mumbo jumbo, you know what I mean? It's not just acting, right? I mean, not just acting spiritual, but it's real. Right? Transformation is real. Awakening is real. Right? Living a life of openness and oneness and freedom is real. Right? And then it's a kind of like a coefficient. You know, it's getting really real with yourself about where you are. And it's really being inspired by a vision of who you can be, of how life can be. And you have to keep that, you know, you have to keep that in front of you. You know? Because if you don't keep it in front of you, and you just, you know, it'll just become same old, same old. You know, why? Because our habit pattern is very strong, right? Our habit pattern is very strong. We are more of who we've been than who we can become, right? As well as us, most of us do not live in environments where we always are being stimulated, inspired toward altruistic, enlightened living, are we? Yeah, I would say, people shaking their heads. I mean, most of us live in environments, you know, where acquisition and fear and anger and resentment and pettiness and gossip, you know, it tends to be more what the norm is. Right? So that's, you know, so we have to be, you know, somewhat a little more deliberative. Or else it's very easy just to, you know, to continue to fall back into old habit patterns. Again, that is the, you know, that is the function of community. That is the function of teachers, and that is why when we are on the path, you know, we like. It makes us happy to be around people who share our vision, who support our vision. It inspires us when we lose the way. They inspire us. When they lose the way, we inspire them, and together we inspire and support each other. Again, Buddhism has a mix of both. You know, there is that piece where you reflect on the human condition, you reflect on the unsatisfactoriness of things, the unsatisfactoriness of leading a life just controlled by acquisition and attachment, you know, et cetera, et cetera. Those kinds of, you know, the disadvantages of living an egocentric life and a self-centered life, and so all that. But really, what really is the energetic, most energetic, is the vision of awakening, of living an enlightened life. You know, in Buddhism, Mahayana Buddhism, there is the kind of, not the ideal, the model, is called bodhisattva. How many people have heard the word bodhisattva? Oh, good. Some have. Half have. But a bodhisattva is an interesting... A bodhisattva is a human being who sees as the central focus of their life freeing themselves from their suffering, freeing themselves from all the delusions that create their suffering, and want to live, we could say, this altruistic life, right? But in addition, they are want to do it so they can help other people, help other people, because they understand that, you know, that the type of suffering or the type of restriction or constriction that they live under, everyone lives under. And they understand the indivisibility and interconnection of people. And so therefore, their desire to be free of their own restrictions is in the service of wanting to really help all people. Free them of their suffering. In Buddhism, we talk about interesting motherly sentient beings. You know, sentient beings means beings who are sentient, who have some sort of sense, human beings, animals, etc. So, but when you talk about sentient life, they talk about motherly sentient beings, which connotes relationship. Right? All beings are my mother. Or we could say all beings are my children, right? Because we know. I mean, you know. I mean, like take Dan over here. I mean, I might not care a thing about Dan, right? I may be totally indifferent to him and his life and his suffering, but if all of a sudden I found out, we had a conversation and he, this is getting a little risque, but I mean, I was thinking, you know, if I all of a sudden found out he told me about his mother, and don't take this the wrong way, I'm just making this up. But all of a sudden I realized that he's my son. Right? Can you see how instantly how it changed toward him? Right? I mean, nothing is different. It's still the same Dan who's been sitting here week after week for years, right? But I've been indifferent to him. But all of a sudden, through just talking, I realize he's my son. Oh my God. Now all of a sudden, what's going to happen immediately? Deep connection, right? I'm really going to care about Dan. About his life, I'm going to want to know everything about his life and what's happening, and, right? Because why? Because all of a sudden, in my mind, I've just turned this little thing where I go, oh, he's my son. And all of a sudden, I care about what happens to him. In the same way, when we begin to, you know, see our fellow human beings in this relationship way, right? All of a sudden, we would start caring about them. I mean, they don't have to be our sons and mothers. They could be first cousins. I don't, you know, everybody decides in their family how far their caring goes out. We all have different extended families, but, you know... You know, maybe we're all first cousins, right? If we're all first cousins, then we do care about each other, what happens to each other, right? Any other questions or challenges to what we're talking about tonight? Yes.
See, if I can put this in words. The river, let's go with the river theme. When you're in the stream, in the river takes you to a place where you start to question who's in the river.
When you're in the river, there are many different practices, right? I think you're talking about practices, meditative practice, and looking deeply into the nature of self and who am I. Yeah.
And where is...
Right, but that's all part of the river. That's all part of the river. I mean, the river is taking you along in that, right? And the river is what carries you along, you know. When you have entered the river, there's no more doubt. There's no more hesitation. There's no more superficial kind of questioning. Am I doing the right thing? Should I be doing this? We're no longer attracted about, you know, should I be on another river? Or should I heard about this river over there? And you know what I'm saying? You know. The river connotes that sense of now there's something carrying me along. There's no more struggle. That's when I was saying, you know, the stream enterer, the first level of the enlightened practitioner. It means there's no more struggle, there's no more doubt. One understands, has had some kind of initial understandings of the truth of the teachings. One goes, oh, now I understand. Right. Doesn't mean it's the end, you know, you're just going to lay back. But it means it's that sense of flow, it's that sense of just being carried along. And it doesn't mean there's different practices and questioning, and, you know, rocks don't appear in the river. It's, you know, as John said, I mean, you know, as long as we're alive, they're going to be rocks. Right. And that, but again, that's okay. Rocks are good.
Right. So the me enters, but it has nothing to do with the me in the end.
No, it doesn't have anything to do with the me in the end. Right. And the me gets us there. Yeah. So that's why in Buddhism we don't despise the self. The self gets us here. Right? It's because we're in prison that we yearn for freedom. Right? So in that way, somebody's been in prison, all of a sudden that great desire to be free and never come back again. You'd say, well, I'm really, you know, and I've talked to people who've come out of prison that way and say, yeah, I'm really grateful I was in prison. Right? It taught me to really value freedom and taught me really to know that I never want to be in prison again. So that way we're happy for the prison. Right? So, yeah, the self, you know, the lotus in the mud. Right? I mean, this is where we start from. And it's all good. And, you know, but we want to understand more deeply. And, you know, again, river, boat, these are all just words. And, in Buddhism, you know, this shore, that shore, the boat is not the raft is not the shore, and all that kind of stuff. So words just kind of point us in the right direction. But eventually it'd be nice to not feel separate from the river. No more obstacles. Again, the river is just an analogy of flow. Right? Things just flow. You know, many people, they live their life, they feel like they're always bumping into things. Always bumping up against things, pushing off things, you know. Extracting ourselves from something, and, right? Working hard to get, you know. The idea of being in the river is flow. There's a current that is carrying me, and I just need to just flow along with it, deal with it. But it all keeps moving. It's, I guess, the opposite of many people feel stuck, feel dry. Life kind of is flat, you know, that kind of thing. the opposite of that. Life is a, life flows, it's open, it's rich. Just in the boat, looking around. Always something new on the river. So we should stop. It's almost done. Unless, does anybody else have a last minute question?